Calls for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Loss of vision can be devastating. What can you do to contribute to the long-term health of your eyes? What are the most common problems, and are there new treatments and diagnostic tools? We're going to discuss all of this and more. And my guest is Dr. Michael Duplessis, an ophthalmologist in private practice in Bethesda. Welcome.
Thank you for having me here.
Now, let's talk about some of the most common problems you see in your practice. What do you have a kind of a scale of what do you see most often, and would it be cataracts?
One of the most common things we see in the practice is cataracts. A lot of eye disease tends to be more popular with time, so cataracts tend to be very popular. Macular degeneration tends to be very popular. People who have other diseases such as diabetes and high blood pressure, high cholesterol also affect the eye. Those tend to be the most popular, and the good thing is there's lots of new advancements in treatments for these diseases as our knowledge has improved over time.
Okay, so let's start with let me jump back a little bit. We hear so much about surgery, a LASIK surgery, throw away your glasses. All right, let's start there because I know this is something you've been involved in since the beginning. Tell me your vision of LASIK and what does it do for people and what can you really accomplish?
Well, LASIK can be a truly wonderful thing. I organized the first United States LASIK course, wrote the first textbook on LASIK, probably have trained a significant percentage of the world's doctors how to perform LASIK. It's a wonderful procedure, gets us out of glasses for distance. Generally, when we think of LASIK, there are three choices. I want to have perfect vision for distance, I want to have perfect vision for reading, or we do one eye that we have perfect vision for distance, one eye perfect vision for reading. And the reason we've been forced to do the one eye distance, one eye reading is until now, technology has never been able permitted us to make a bifocal cornea. An eye that permits us to look both at distance and reading much is the same as we have bifocal glasses and progressive glasses. We want to reproduce the same thing in the cornea. We hope this year to be able to offer that.
Oh, wow. So that means that I wouldn't have to make a choice between my right eye or my left eye. They'd both do the same thing effectively at near and distant vision.
That's exactly right. FDA trials are starting on this year, and because a lot of my LASIK patients, they have perfect vision, but they still have to wear Dimestor reading glasses.
Uh-huh.
And why they're very reasonably priced, they don't like to wear glasses
at all. Like to wear glasses, like I'm sitting here with my glasses on my nose, my Dimestor reading glasses. I didn't have LASIKs, I need that magnification. My arms are no longer long enough, actually, is what the problem is.
Well, I've had LASIK and my arms are long, but there are times, yes, I have quite the selection of reading glasses.
But at any rate, so the LASIK surgery is generally safe?
An extraordinarily safe procedure. The technique is based primarily on making a flap to treat the laser. And the reason we make a flap is because it reduces the amount of scarring in the eye. Generally, with a LASIK flap, we expect to see little to no scarring.
Oh, that's good.
Which permits us to treat all ranges, people with from very modest corrections to people with the classic Coke bottle glasses.
Mm-hmm. So that must be a treat for someone who can throw those away.
Oh, we have many patients who could not find their glasses if they took them off and put them in front of them, and the next day they can see the alarm clock on the far side of the room without glasses.
That is totally incredible. All right, let's talk about the diseases of the eye, where LASIK is a procedure that's an optional procedure generally, I would suspect.
Surely it's a procedure of convenience.
Yes.
You know, right. Insurance companies typically don't pay for it. It's just people do not want to wear glasses.
They want to get rid of glasses. But let's talk about the diseases that you see, the serious things that can affect the loss of vision, for example, glaucoma. That is a fairly common disease, isn't it?
Very common problem, generally increases with birthdays, normally about 10 of 1,000 over age 60.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is as much as we have high blood pressure, well, we have high eye pressure. And glaucoma is nothing but high eye pressure. The eye has its own circulatory system as much the same as the body has its own circulatory system. When the pressure goes up too high, it kills the nerves in the eye, and it can over time, and this is generally not an acute problem but rather a decade-long problem, over time we will see a progressive loss of vision, generally starting in the periphery and finally ending up in the center. And the reason we need to go for testing is by the time most patients realize they have a problem and it affects their center vision, they're really in serious trouble, because you can't undo the damage. You can prevent all kinds of damage, but you can't undo it. And that's the problem with
glaucoma. So that's particularly critical. Now, I know you're my eye doctor. When I come to see you, I know you have a little machine that you touch my eye. I mean, it's really very, it's not unpleasant at all. You're hardly aware of it being done. But that's testing the pressure, isn't it, to see if, in fact, the glaucoma is present.
Yes, it does. And it's a very accurate measure. It's a completely painless procedure. And the good and beautiful thing about glaucoma is we have countless numbers of medications for it. So most people diagnosed early will not lose their vision. They may be, your worst case scenario may be I have to use eye drops, but you will not lose your vision.
Well, the key here is early diagnosis, which just means we have to visit our eye doctor to get it checked. Okay, so we can treat glaucoma. If it's progressed, however, that vision is lost.
Yes, it is.
You're not gonna get it back. So the importance is early intervention. Cataracts are something that happen with age. I gather they're easily removed.
They are. Generally, nowadays, cataract surgery has evolved to the point of no patch, no stitches, and even no postoperative medications. The lens in the eye has become cloudy. It's much the same as looking outside and the window is clear. And over time, your window gets dirtier and dirtier and dirtier. And I probably don't clean my windows in my house very often, but there is a certain point where you go, wow, really don't see well. People often describe a film at night, progressive problems with nighttime vision, increasing glare, increasing halos. Nighttime driving gets exciting. And I always tell people when it gets too exciting, then that's time to get rid of the cataracts.
It's like you see lots of stars and sparkles, but no vehicles or anything else. And so that is eminently correctable.
Totally correctable. Typically what we use is an ultrasound device, dissolve your cataract, replace with a clear artificial one, and so you will take it and put it in a plastic lens. And we've had some great leaps in the last 10 years in lenses, and so typically we always would try to correct people for distance, get you the best possible distance. Mm-hmm. And it really, that didn't matter what your prescription was before or after, if you had a thick prescription. So typically about 79% of our patients after cataract surgery do not require glasses for to pass the driving test. The problem is they still need reading glasses. Mm-hmm. So recently we have been putting in bifocal lenses. So as much as you have bifocal glasses, we have bifocal lenses in the eye that permit both distance, middle distance, and reading, such that our post-op patients would not require any glasses.
So that's incredible.
Just a huge advance. And the good part is, you know, a lot of us have had trouble adjusting to our progressive lenses and our bifocal lenses, but we have found if we put the lenses inside the eye that the adjustment period is actually quite easy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's absolutely incredible. It is astonishing the progress that's been made in just the last 5 or 10 years in terms of surgical procedures.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we were putting men on the moon, but it was till about 1970 that we couldn't operate behind the colored part of the eye. So the eye techniques in the last 30 years have just revolutionized the treatment of, you know, macular degeneration, diabetes, cataracts. A lot of things
all
we
of
took
things
for granted. You
yeah,
know.
And we're going to talk about those things, too. Let's just take a brief pause here and let our listeners know that they're tuned in to Off Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Dr. Michael Duplessis. He's an ophthalmologist in private practice in Bethesda, and we're discussing your eye health. And, you know, we take our vision for granted so much, and it's just like our hearing. And we really need to be conscious of the fact that we have to take care of our eyes just like we do our body. And, of course, our physical health overall can be reflected in our eyes, as you've just pointed out. And let's talk about that, the diabetes and its impact on the eyes, because that's a disease of your system, which you have to deal with. And if diabetes gets out of control, I suspect it's going to cause you to be blind.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, diabetes is a disease of small blood vessels, and the eye is unfortunately filled with nothing but small blood vessels. So diabetes generally has its worst effect both in our eyes and also in our kidneys. Again, but the good thing about diabetes is it's a very popular problem. So there has been many large studies following the treatment of diabetes. And so we have now very well-established protocols how to treat diabetes and diabetic retinopathy. And so but unfortunately, it's also a time-dependent problem. You would imagine a third of patients after 20 years will have some form of diabetic retinopathy. And a small percentage will require laser treatment. Even tiny percentage will require surgery. Again, this is another one. If we catch it ahead of time, we can prevent a whole lot of problems, you know, downstream for it. Because what happens is you get these small blood vessels, they leak. And it just, it's a plumbing problem. They leak blood and blood products in the back of the eye. Generally, the treatment is just to stop that bleeding. And the problem with a lot of diabetics is by the time they realize, again, they have a problem, they're in big trouble. Now, unlike glaucoma, you can reverse a lot of the diabetic issues with proper treatment, but you will never be quite as good as you once were.
So there are procedures that you can do. The bigger one is, of course, to prevent as much damage as possible.
Because every single study has shown the tighter your blood sugar control, the better your long-term health of your eye. And so everyone agrees. And so a lot of our advances has been as much due to medical science being better able to control with some pumps, better types of insulin, better medication. You know, we see people coming in with a lot better healthy eyes. It's much more unusual in this area than it is typical to have severe disease.
I see. So, again, here, control the diabetes, regular eye exams, and taking initiative if needed be, if you're having an issue with the eyes. And is that generally, I don't, maybe you don't know the percentage, but people who are diabetic, is there generally a very large percentage of them that have involvement of vision?
I would say it's actually a very small percentage.
Oh, really?
Certainly less. After 20 years, the percentage will have some form of diabetic retinopathy, but severe diabetic retinopathy, thankfully, has been limited to a very tiny percentage of the population. We don't have the percentage of people going blind in any reason, for any reason, glaucoma, macular degeneration in itself is small, but diabetes, unfortunately, makes up a significant percentage of our patients who do go blind. And one of the more common causes of blindness, which is unfortunate since a lot of it is preventable.
Yeah. Okay. By controlling the diabetes. Okay. Let's talk about, I think, well, there's a couple of things I want to talk about, detached retinas and macular degeneration as well. Detached retinas are, what causes this to happen? Is it a blow to the eye or?
Unfortunately, it's the most common reason for detached retina is bad luck. And
luck.
Certainly blows to the eye would contribute. People who have very long, thin eyes, nearsighted people, people with thick glasses are at much higher risk. The eye is hollow and filled with a clear semi-transparent jelly. And the purpose of that jelly is you get hit in the eye, it acts as a shock absorber. Unfortunately, sunlight and birthdays over time cause your jelly to shrink. And as it shrinks, sometimes it can pull on our retina and cause it to detach. Now, the good part about retinal detachment is it can be repaired quite successfully. Again, like many of our eye diseases, key is early diagnosis. Mm-hmm. We all have floaters. And I mean, white walls, white pages, blue skies, I see them. But in medicine, we're boring. We don't like variety. So, you know, if you have one floater, that's okay. But the next day, if you have lots of floaters, you see a spider web in your eye, you have flashing lights, dark cloud on your vision, you have a serious problem and you need to get to the eye doctor right away.
Run.
Don't walk. Most of the time it may, people come in, I'm like, you know, this could be happy birthday, just something normal we see with time, or your retina is detached.
So you can do an exam to determine whether or not it's a detached retina.
And just a simple dilated exam will be able to tell right away.
Mm-hmm. And then you would have surgery.
And you have surgery. And, you know, most of the time you don't, sometimes surgery is nothing more than laser. It's light, you sit in, very quick, very easy. Sometimes it's a little more involved and you have to go in the operating room. But most retinal detachments can be repaired extremely successfully. I have many retinal detachment patients with perfect vision.
Oh, that's incredible.
So it's just, but, you know, it was the same thing. They recognized they had a problem, they got treated right away.
And they got it taken care of. Okay. You mentioned sun. How important is it to wear sunglasses?
Unfortunately, it's extraordinarily important. I have to say I didn't wear them when I was younger, but, you know, there's been a number of studies. The Australians did one on eye color, and they found out the relationship between eye color and eye disease. Blue, green, gray-eyed people have the highest incidence occupationally, farmers and fishermen, highest incidence because UV light from the sun will cause cataracts, will cause macular degeneration, will cause skin cancer.
Or athletes who are out in the sun.
Absolutely.
Like tennis players?
It's a Sunday, you know, we used to, my younger days, you know, the old baby oil and all those, but never again, you know, 50 block hats and sunglasses, because unfortunately too many bad things associated with it.
But not all sunglasses are created equal. You need to get sunglasses that block UVA and UVB rays.
That's exactly right. And generally a lot of times when we buy sunglasses, we pick a nice fashion we like, but what you're really looking for is you want to block 90% of UVA and UVB. Mm-hmm. And by if you do block 90% of UVA and UVB, you reduce your relative risk of macular degeneration by about 300%.
Wow.
So the National Eye Institute looked at macular degeneration both from a sunlight point of view and a nutritional point of view, and they came out with extraordinarily strong recommendations for either sunglasses, and some of us don't like sunglasses, and they said sunglasses, visor, or hat. Take your pick, because they were unable to differentiate one from the other. They're all equally successful, so use those. And then second, it's diet. You know, no one ever believed when the National Eye Institute started that it's an AREDS study. It's an age-related eye disease study, and they looked at macular degeneration, the benefits of nutrition, particularly antioxidants.
Mm-hmm.
And they have vitamins. We all go to the vitamin store and see vitamins with antioxidants. But what you're thinking is green leafy vegetables. So if you like green leafy vegetables, you don't have to take antioxidants. But if you don't like green leafy vegetables, you're looking at vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E. And so the most typical vitamin, not to pitch one particular brand, Ocuvite, eye caps, tend to be some. They're very reasonable. It's about $16 a month. And they will reduce your relative risk of progression if you do have macular degeneration from going on to the more severe forms. And so anyone with mild, moderate, early, a wonderful thing to
take.
We're going to
take a short pause, and we'll come back and talk about this some more. If you've just joined us, you're listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Dr. Michael Duplessis. He's an ophthalmologist in private practice in Bethesda, and we're discussing eye health, a very important subject. And we were talking about macular degeneration. You're talking about the value of diet. Antioxidants. You know, we see a lot of foods that say that they have antioxidants added to them. I suppose that in a way is similar to taking a vitamin.
It is. It is. And a lot, you know, some of us, there's certain things I love and there's certain things I don't like. And, you know, I've never been able to make a good taste in Brussels sprout in my entire life. And so if you know, green leafies,
I'll give you a recipe after this show.
There are things you don't like, and we know green leafy vegetables and antioxidants are good for us, because if you have a balanced diet, you like your greens, you like your meats, you're going to do fine, and you don't need to supplement. But if there's certain things you don't like, vegetables, and you never eat salad, well, it's an easy enough thing. And if you're going to take a multivitamin, you might as well take one that's rich in antioxidants.
Mm-hmm. Why not, right?
Because the price point's about the same. And
but they have discovered, okay, so macular degeneration, what causes it? Because I think that is probably one of the things that scares us the most, because it is the devastating eye disease. I know someone who has macular degeneration.
And you're right. It's truly one of our most devastating eye diseases. We typically have two forms, dry and then wet. Well, wet is dry with leaky blood vessels. And the most common, we believe there's a genetic linkage, but caused by sunlight, UV light from the sun. So it's probably sun UV light damage in genetically predisposed individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of us will say, you know, my mother had macular degeneration, my grandmother, but a lot of times eye color also runs in. And as the Australians proved, eye color is a big link. So blue-eyed people tend to have blue-eyed children or green-eyed children.
And lighter colored eyes tend to be more susceptible to the sun, too, I would think.
Absolutely. So much greater risk. And you will see macular degeneration in brown-eyed people, but you know, blue-eyed people, we get very blue, green, and gray, very nervous about.
Okay. So, again, this is something that if you detect it early, are you able to help forestall the damage? Or, I mean, what is the prognosis for someone who's diagnosed with it?
Caught early, you are able to forestall damage. But you need the National Eye Institute study on the benefit of antioxidants. If you were to follow that, people with mild, moderate will really slow down the progression. Now, people with severe macular degeneration, especially wet macular degeneration where they have leaky blood vessels, why the vitamins don't help, we've actually over the last, I'll say 5 to 10 years, have developed a number of compounds that we give by injection that actually help wet macular degeneration. And just to go over that again, wet macular degeneration is new blood vessels growing in, and these are abnormal blood vessels.
Uh-huh.
And we give injections of these compounds. Avastin is a popular one, and it will actually cause these new blood vessels that leak in the back of the eye just to fade away. And I think all of us in the eye world have seen just some truly miraculous results, because the old way we treated, we'd say you have a leaky blood vessel, we take a laser, we treat the laser. I mean, with a laser, we treat the leak. Well, the with a laser, you cause
then
a scar.
Something else causes something.
You cause a scar, and then if you cause a scar, then that area is blind. You say, well, it's not leaking anymore, but I'm sorry, you can't see. With these injections, you actually, the blood vessels go away, the leak goes away, and you can see. So that's,
oh, wow.
That's why it's been a real blessing for us.
So there, no one should ever give up hope.
No, never at all. Never at all, not from macular degeneration, because even our patients who unfortunately have severe eye disease, a lot with computers and technology between magnifiers, television monitors, really people that we once were never able to offer some form of vision, mm-hmm. we will be able to.
You can do a lot.
And down the road, probably at least 10 years, we've been putting in microchips in people's eyes. Now, we haven't quite got the point to where that's an effective technology. We're right now treating congenital diseases, people who have, let's say, normal anatomy, but the eye doesn't quite work. And so there's been some miraculous works with computer chips. We've tried putting magnifying telescopes in the eye and anything to get our patients to read who can't. So there's a lot of huge things coming just on the road.
Oh, that gives me goosebumps. That's so exciting.
Well, I think ultimately we will have artificial retina or a chip or something to help these people.
But you can't transplant an eye.
Unfortunately, not yet. We can transplant the cornea, but the back of the eye can't transplant the retina yet.
And the cornea, why would the cornea be damaged? What would that?
Well, cornea, unfortunately, people occasionally do really stupid things, but bad luck happens to the best of us. So cornea can be damaged from trauma, but a lot of diseases will damage. There's a lot of hereditary diseases that will damage the cornea. And now we used to be able to replace the entire cornea. Now, depending on your disease, we can replace just the top 1% of the cornea, the top 99% of the cornea, or only the inside bottom 1%. And especially in cornea transplantation, I have a book chapter out this year that we've been able to reduce cornea transplants from 16 stitches in about a year and a half healing to no stitches in about two weeks of healing. So we've really made great strides in the cornea world between LASIK and cornea transplantation. Everything is now easier, faster, and better for our patients.
That is totally incredible. It's a word of hope that you're giving us. But the bigger thing is that we have to be on top of it as well and do our part in having our eyes examined and taking care of the rest of our body.
Well, it's so true because, you know, most of us, we never know our eyes are there. And we only notice our eyes if they're red, they're irritated, they bother us, we get hit in the eye. But unfortunately, there are certain diseases that are silent, glaucoma, diabetes, that can be prevented. You just have to figure out you have them.
You have to know that. As a matter of fact, the American Academy of Ophthalmology has a website, and you have some interesting information that you got there. I went there and saw, actually it was the Eye Care America.org website, and I think it's sponsored by the Academy, and they have something called an eye disease simulators, and it simulates what it would be like from the patient's viewpoint. And believe me, when you look at these, it makes you want to run to your eye doctor because it shows exactly what your vision is going to be. It'll take a picture and it'll show you, there was a picture of a little boy, and it showed you how macular degeneration just wiped out the whole center of that picture. I mean, it was really scary.
Because it's kind of, macular degeneration, much the same from vision. It's much, if you were to wear a pair of glasses and let's say you had chicken for lunch, take a nice big greasy chicken finger, put it right over the dead center. And so I can see you, but you're really fuzzy. I may not even be able to recognize you even though you're 2 feet away. I have some peripheral vision, which is okay, but the peripheral vision is not a reading vision. It's not a distance vision.
It'd be very difficult. Well, fascinating. And the word here is prevention, prevention, and prevention.
Absolutely.
Yep. That's the way to maintain eye health. Thank you so much. It's fascinating to see you.
Well, thank you for having me.
And I like the work that you're doing and that you volunteer for Mercy Clinic. I have to put that little plug in for you.
We do. We love Mercy Clinic. Does a wonderful job, and we try to do all their eye surgery for free.
That is wonderful that you're doing that. But at any rate, thank you so much for being with us. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest. My guest has been Dr. Michael Duplessis, an ophthalmologist in private practice in Bethesda. And you've been listening right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for being with us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.